This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 10th of April 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. Today, I'm joined by Tim Robey, film critic for the Daily Telegraph, to talk through some interesting cinema releases to keep on your radar. We'll be discussing Keanu Reeves as an assassin seeking revenge after the loss of his wife and dog in John Wick. We'll be talking drone warfare in Andrew Niccol's new film, Good Kill. And we'll find out the strains an avalanche can put on your marriage in new Swedish film, Force Majeure. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Now, we're going to begin with John Wick. The film stars Keanu Reeves as an ex-assassin who's back for a streak of revenge. Let's hear a clip now before we chat.
Until that dog arrived on my doorstep, a final gift for my wife. In that moment, I received some semblance of hope. An opportunity to grieve unalone. And your son took that from me. Stole that from me. Killed that from me!
And that was a clip of Keanu Reeves as John Wick. Very dark, almost Shakespearean. Tell us about the film.
Yeah, that's by some measure the longest speech Keanu has in the film, actually. He's a very laconic character and often says nothing and just communicates rage with his eyes. He ends the speech by saying, "You're asking me if I'm back? I'm thinking I'm back." And Keanu Reeves is back. It's a very well-tailored vehicle for him, actually, because it's been some while before we've seen him in anything good whatsoever. And I think this film is actually really well handled. It begins in a sort of very sentimental mode with his wife dying and these gangsters coming after him to steal his car. They kill the puppy that was his wife's dying gift to him. And this is what triggers the whole plot. And that sounds like the most ridiculous and corny thing. But somehow they managed to invest it with actually quite a lot of emotion. I went to see it again with my brother, who was definitely wiping back a tear at that point. And that gets you on board because it's fundamentally quite a pulpy, violent, and kind of unknowing, kind of self-aware revenge thriller. But it has just enough sincerity, I think, and Keanu Reeves's inherent likability to pull you all the way through it.
Now, it sounds like there aren't many good guys other than the dog in this film. But one of the cinematic characters seems to be the city of New York itself. Tell us a little bit about the production values and the connection with New York City.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's plenty of swooping nighttime shots over the skyscrapers, if you like that sort of thing. And it's done in a very kind of darkly seductive way. It has a vision of New York, which is not kind of real New York. It's its own version. It's almost a comic book vision. Reminded me a little bit of The Crow, the 90s version of The Crow. It has that kind of gothic sensibility, but without pushing it too far. One of the things I really like about it is that the kind of black comedy of this assassin's guild, they're all installed in this hotel called the Continental, which is only for assassins. And you check in and you pay for everything with these gold coins. And there's this strict rule that you're not allowed to conduct any business within the establishment. And Ian McShane, who plays the manager of the place, kind of lays down the law about this. But of course, one of Keanu's rival assassins breaks that rule and comes after him when a hit is put out on him, and that becomes a kind of big confrontation. And it's just the way that the assassin kind of guild moves and kind of works, the kind of different associations, and Willem Dafoe is in there as well as another one of them, and you're not quite sure who's on what side for quite a long time in the film. And I think it juggles all of that really well. It's got a really kind of tight genre structure, and I think it's skillfully put together. It has John Woo kind of action flourishes, but it also has the sort of moody, brooding, kind of slightly throwback 1970s feel of like a Walter Hill film, something like The Driver from the late 70s.
What I found interesting is this is the first film directed by, it was Keanu Reeves' stuntman, or double, am I correct?
Yeah, it's this guy who's been dealing with stunt work in quite a lot of his previous films. I think he was involved in the Matrix films. There's actually two directors, but one of them chose to be uncredited for some reason. But the guy, Chad Stahelski, I think his name is, who's the credited one, is the kind of stunt expert. And I think it promises a lot, actually. I think it's also probably going to prompt sequels. It's gone down very well. And I was refreshed by it because of, I think, the sincerity of it was what helped me out. There have been some other very sort of hyper-violent films lately, like Kingsman, The Secret Service, which I really took against because I thought the whole, there was a sort of gloating quality to that whole film. It was completely insincere. Everything was a wink. Everything was ironic. Nothing was for real. And nothing felt really human at all. There were no human stakes to it. Whereas in this film, I think there are. And I think Keanu, who, for all his limitations as an actor, has always been one of the most sort of inherently sympathetic people in all of his vehicles. I think he is the absolute star of the show, and the film is so well tailored to him. It fits him like a glove, really.
Now, let's move on to our next film. This is Good Kill, Andrew Niccol's new war drama about Tom Egan, who's played by Ethan Hawke, and he's coming to terms with killing drones. Now, who is the director? What's his past? And what's special about this film?
So Andrew Niccol started out as a screenwriter. He did the screenplay for The Truman Show, which was an absolutely superb script. And then he branched out into directing his own work as well. He worked with Ethan Hawke on Gattaca in 1997. And since then, he made a film called Simone with Al Pacino, and he made the very disappointing Nicolas Cage war movie Lord of War, which I thought was a sort of a real downturn for him. This is a step back up. I think this is a much more intelligent film than that, and it tackles the very important subject of drone warfare and the question of, you know, the ethics of pushing the button, the ethics of being the other side of the world, pushing the button and annihilating a building full of people because some of them are probably terrorist suspects. And the question of, like, how much proof you need to do that, whose orders you're following, whether your own moral compunction should come into it, if you're just blindly following orders, what that says about you and what that might do to you psychologically.
Why don't we have a listen of the clip now?
Make no fucking mistake about it. We are killing people. So I'm going to drill this into your heads every goddamn day. This ain't fucking PlayStation. Even though, and the brass don't like to admit it, our operation was modeled on Xbox. And half of you were recruited in malls precisely because you are a bunch of fucking gamers. And war is now a first-person shooter. But you pull the trigger here, it's for fucking real.
And that was a clip from Good Kill. What were we hearing there?
That was Bruce Greenwood, who plays Ethan Hawke's superior officer, giving a briefing to all the young recruits who are coming in about, you know, what they're going to have to do. It's really well set up, this film, to be quite interesting and dark. And it goes some way to presenting Ethan Hawke's character as sort of a little bit psychotic. I mean, he's almost heading down the path towards Travis Bickle or something. He's quite disturbed by his own experiences on the front line, but he's been relegated to the position of, you know, pressing the button. He's not being allowed into an actual fighter plane. He's an alcoholic. He has serious problems at home with his wife, played by January Jones. And you watch him sort of start to unravel as the demands placed on him by his superiors become more and more kind of compromising, essentially, and more and more dubious. You know, the missions that he's being told to do become dodgier and dodgier and dodgier, to the point where we're really not sure who these people are he's killing anymore, and it's unclear whether anyone is.
I think what was interesting in that clip was the excitement and almost the sexiness of technology, and very much playing to an Xbox generation, but these are real lives at stake. It seems to be a movie of its time in that sense.
It very much is, yeah. And I mean, that is acutely disturbing, the idea that they would look for people who are skilled at, you know, Xbox Call of Duty style first-person shooter games for that expertise when you're having to make these kind of split-second judgments. And, you know, the question of, like, whether really we're sort of training humans to act in that robotic way, where they're just, the moral decision is removed from them. That's all quite interesting. And I think I do like the way it decides that its main character is potentially quite disturbed and troubled. I think it slightly cops out as it goes into the kind of third act, because it also wants to make a statement about how American soldiers and Americans might be trying to help the situation in the Middle East and might be trying to do the right thing, perhaps in the wrong ways or perhaps with the wrong technology or whatever. But it certainly is trying to grapple with the question of, like, why aren't we doing the right thing here? And let's try and do that, which I think is not the most It's not the most sophisticated or the most kind of honest way that it could have gone.
I was wondering if how political the film was and how much it did take sides, and did that distract from the storytelling?
I mean, it sort of doesn't take sides in any very complex way, in that we really don't get to know any characters on the other side. We're essentially viewing them through viewfinders. We're rarely there on ground level with them. In fact, we almost never are. So essentially, we're just looking at pixels on a screen, which is exactly the position that the American soldiers are in. So we're entirely inside their head and kind of wandering through that moral maze, if you like. I liked the character played by Zoe Kravitz, who's another one of Ethan Hawke's colleagues in this film. They're looking at footage on a screen, and she witnesses a rape taking place. And it becomes clear that this is a repeated scenario, that this terrorist suspect is repeatedly raping someone in a compound. And they can do nothing about it because he's not on their hit list. So she has to just sort of sit back and watch this happening again and again and again. Meanwhile, there are other missions they're being given to blow up buildings, and there are sort of children in the street that they're sort of being brought into the line of fire, and there are women trying to help the wounded and dead, and they're being blown up. They're doing this, what they call double tap, which is when you a drone attack strikes a building, and then a minute later they strike the same place again, so that they get the people who are actually helping the inhabitants of the building. And that obviously is a very difficult thing to deal with in any ethical way. I think the film is very interesting on all of that, and I think it's juggling a lot of interesting elements. I just think that the payoff is a little bit soft.
Well, if you are tempted, Good Kill is out now in the UK, and again, we'll be hitting cinemas in the US in May and then rolling out around the world. Now, to end today's programme, let's talk about a new Swedish film, Force Majeure. This is the story of what happens to a perfect family after a controlled avalanche reveals hitherto hidden cracks while on day two of their perfect skiing holiday. To set the scene, let's have a listen to a clip from the movie.
Alltså, det är såna jäkla krafter.
Är det safe?
Ja, de vet vad de gör.
Pappa!
Pappa! Det är ju sådär där kontrollerat.
Pappa!
Harry, det är lugnt, det är lugnt.
It was quite shocking. Everyone is fine. I mean, they know what they're doing.
He got so scared that he ran away from the table.
What?
A clip from Force Majeure, quite dramatic, but I've heard it described as a psychological thriller, but also as a satirical comedy.
It's a very black comedy is what the way I think of it. The director is Ruben Östlund, who specializes in really kind of putting thumbscrews on his audience, essentially. All of his films are very provocative, and they're all challenging political correctness and our kind of assumptions and prejudices, and I suppose particularly Swedish bourgeois prejudices. His main characters here live in this complete cocoon of privilege. They're there on their kind of luxurious skiing holiday when this thing happens that might have been a disaster, but actually isn't. It's something that passes very quickly. But in that moment, the husband of the family makes a very cowardly move away from helping out his wife and children. He essentially legs it. And they,
with
of course,
notice. With his iPhone and gloves.
He grabs his iPhone and gloves off the table and legs it. And his priorities become clear. And the kind of excruciating comedy of it is that they don't really directly deal with it. It sort of sits there in the air. It's the elephant in the room, if you like, for most of the rest of the duration. And other characters start hearing about what happened, and they start to broach it sort of slightly, and he of course completely denies it. But we know what we saw. He claims to have his own version of what happened. We know what we saw, and actually his version is certainly erroneous. And he's completely kind of caving in and backing down. The way it develops is very interesting, and it's very, very kind of tense and quite excruciating in that way that a kind of well-crafted comedy of embarrassment and denial can be.
Brilliant dialogue, but I think also what is so powerful is the use of sound and soundscape. Can you talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, this guy is getting better and better as a filmmaker, I think, and this is his most elaborately conceived film so far. If just talking about the main avalanche sequence, which is a real coup of cinema, I think. I mean, the effects required in that shot, it's all done in one shot essentially, are pretty phenomenal, and it comes up comes up on you and kind of like takes you by surprise, I think. The building of sound is beautifully done. And actually, I like the music, the use of Vivaldi, the Spring from the Four Seasons, right the way through the film has an increasingly ironic effect as well. He also brings in some minor characters who allow him to sort of play into some of his favorite themes, which are all about the kind of strata of Swedish society and people's attitude to, you know, the haves and have-nots, and the other people working and on holiday in the resort. He also wants to make a sort of a statement about masculinity and Swedish masculinity, which I think is one of his more heavy-handed threads in this film, actually. But the family dynamics, and particularly what the children think, I think are fascinating, because it's certainly not, you know, the mother is not entirely blameless in this by any means. And she's determined to glue the kind of marriage back together, regardless of what the children might think. And their kind of attitude to it becomes increasingly important.
Now, this film premiered at the Cannes Film Festival last May. How important is a film festival like Cannes to a film like this, a foreign film made by a Scandinavian director?
Really crucial. I think it was unlucky, in fact, not to win a prize. It was in the Uncertain Regard sidebar. And the film that won there was a film called White God, which came out a few weeks ago, which I do like as well. But I think this is the better film. And I think it would have probably benefited from a major prize like that. It deserved it. I think it was also in the running for a nomination for Best Foreign Film at the Oscars, which it, again, just missed out on. But I think the fact that the film has been so warmly received by most critics is very, very clear in terms of the kind of release, the prominence of the release it's getting. It's getting a lot of attention here. I think a lot of people will go and see it.
Well, worth watching. That's Force Majeure, which is out in the UK this week and will be unfurling in cinemas around you very soon. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Tim Robey, thank you very much as always. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time next Monday when we'll be talking art. So for now, adieu and a bientôt.